Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper, Ronald J. Martin. Boys, I have no enthusiasm for this whatsoever. I'm 46. We've been doing it for 8 years. Nothing to talk about and no desire to do so. That's where I'm at. Feeling a little existential this morning, a little what's the point-ish. Ronald, you're probably on the road. Where are you?
Yeah, I'm in New Albany, Indiana.
Oh, wow. Great.
Preaching at the church that we did our last live show at on Sunday.
Oh, terrific.
And is there still sort of a residual glow? Do they seem to have like gained a significant amount of attendance? Any major spillover?
They don't know what to do. They're like at that church problem where it's like, man, we were at like 700, now we're at 500 after the live show every week. We don't know what to do with all these extra people. We got to develop programs. It's literally a good and bad problem that they're having right now due to our show. So
That was a green room. Check it out for me.
Yeah, it's great. I haven't been in there yet, but there is a residual glow that just comes off the church now, you know, since we spent that 2.5 hours there that night, you know.
Hey, can I run a thing by you? Please do. Something that a friend of mine shared with me. He's kind of in the church, advising business or whatever, consulting. That's the word that I was looking for. And he made this kind of hilarious observation about church planters and just church people in general, in that they basically have small businesses, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, even if you have a huge church, your staff is like 10. Mm-hmm. But they all act like they're Elon Musk, and they all read books by entrepreneurs and like Steve Jobs. And they have this like Steve Jobs mindset about a thing that's actually really a small business, even if it's going really, really well. Does that quote mean anything to you? Because I thought it was really interesting and funny.
I mean, I think it totally does. Yeah. Because it's like you have, like, what's weird is, you know, like you have to have those considerations, right? Because like, you got to keep the lights on in the building, right? It's like you're still thinking about that kind of stuff. You have people that are on the payroll. You're thinking about those types of things a lot, and it's a nonprofit, so you're not selling anything, which makes it complex.
So why are you reading the Steve Jobs biographies and thinking of yourselves in that way? That seems really ridiculous to me. There should be another category of like ways of thinking about yourself.
I mean, I'm not. You asked me the question. I've never read a Steve Jobs biography in my life.
Right.
But
Ronnie is deeply embedded in Wendell Berry book clubs for the summer. So yeah, very, very different direction.
Yeah, I would not be a Steve Jobby kind of a biography kind of guy. But you know, I get what you're saying though. You know?
There's a weird thing going on there though, because that observation is like 60% true, and 40% completely misses the kind of the weird dynamic of leading in a church, which is that say you are on a staff at a church of 700 people. So you have, you know, 10, 12 full-time staff members. That's a small business. Mm-hmm. Except in every other small business, those 12 people work pretty much exclusively with one another on behalf of the business. And in the church, they work the majority of their time with other people outside. So it's this like, and you have members of the organization, and you're constantly trying to recruit members of the organization to work on behalf of the organization for free. And so it's a really, you know, it's almost like having 300 employees if you have a large volunteer base, except that they're not your employees. So there's a lot of accuracy in it in that, like, yeah, you're not leading a national phenomenon of an organization. There's not this sort of massive complexity of multi-layered everything. But it is a lot more than just like, you know, the local computing repair business with 8 employees that, you know, even if the numbers are close.
Interesting. Boys, let's take a break. And when we get back, we'll talk about the kinds of ads people are getting and maybe get into why I don't feel like doing this. We'll be back.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, we're back. Let's do a little deep dive into the lack of energy on my part this morning. I have questions. You guys are men of the cloth. I'm going to put you to work. Why do I not feel like doing this? B, do you guys feel like doing it? And C, what do you do when you don't feel like doing it? Like, how do you sort of navigate that? Those are multi-part questions. Pipe, you go first.
So the first question was, why don't you feel like doing this?
Yes.
Well, my recollection of, you know, having done this show with you for, what now, 8 years? Something
eight
like
years,
that?
Man. I mean, it's a long time, dude.
Yeah, there's... We are, you know, a church plant is no longer a church plant after 8 years. It's just like a full on church. Like we're no longer a startup podcast. We're old.
Yeah.
You go through cyclical glumness, and I feel like it has something to do with end of the school year, start of the school year. I don't know. I haven't tracked it. That would be a little creepy. But it feels like you're in a down cycle right now. It's a Ted Glum down cycle. It could also possibly be because, you know, a couple weeks ago you sent your son off to work for the summer and then you went on vacation. You're now back from vacation. Back from vacation is ripe for glumness, you know, just because you went from kind of utopia to it's a 7 billion degrees and you have to mow the lawn in Middle Tennessee.
Yeah, no, that's a good word. There's a bit of what's the pointishness operative for me right now. In that, like, all the same people are doing all the same things. Everybody's arguing about the same stuff. I've got this beautiful house that I'm, like, not quite keeping up with, you know. And I'm just reflecting on, like, when KK and I were first married, living in, like, 500 square feet, we were never happier. You know what I mean? But you hang around more, you get more titles, you do more things, you put out more product, you do more podcasts. It doesn't necessarily make your life better. And I'm not trying to do some Fight Club early 2000s, get rid of all your stuff
sounds
thing.
Like, but it sounds like you're quoting the Message version of Ecclesiastes, frankly.
Yeah, and you would know, right? You just did a big Ecclesiastes project.
Wow, nice transition there, guys.
That I appreciate that.
Well planned, a little promo.
And straight down the fairway. Well done.
Which promoting doesn't make us happy anymore either. But I'm still good at doing it. You know, it doesn't mean you lose the muscles. I don't know. Big R, thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, I think you're like me, T. I think like we have, man, our existentialism, it either is like all the way to the north or all the way to the south. So we can't just go, I'm a little glum today. Don't really feel like doing anything. And it's just another day. And you're going to have many more days like that. And, most people are able to slough it off. But for us, we have to get all into what is the meaning of life, because we're just. So I think we get kind of polar when we start like reflecting on things of this nature. And like, we can't just say, hey, it's just one of those days where I'm just, I don't know, maybe the lack of sleep's catching up on me, or maybe it could be like dozens of different things that cause us to be in this particular mood. But we kind of go all the way into what is the purpose of life, you know, rather than we're not really good plotters is probably what it is. We are probably people that like to start things in some ways. We like new things, but then when those things become a little routine, You know, even though we probably like routines too, but when certain things become routine, we get a little restless and we get a little like, I don't know why I'm doing what I'm doing, because it's lost its newness and we struggle with that. I don't know. It's part of being a writer or an artist or all that kind of. It's why you do new things. It's why you're constantly. In a podcast, technically, it's like we're doing a new thing every week, but we're not. We're doing the same thing every week. And we're also in a medium where you look around and you go, man, my contribution to this medium, I don't know. I mean, we got a niche. We got an audience. Man, our fans are incredible. And I mean, that's super encouraging. But it also doesn't mean that on a Friday morning in the middle of June, like, we're all super pumped to be here, right?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I think that's good. And, like, I don't know, this is probably the Enneagram 3 in me. I'm not even good at, like, the fun parts of being glum. Like, I know certain people, like, when they get glum, I'll be like, how you doing? And they're like, oh, I'm glum. I sat in a blanket in the dark and watched The Office for the 11th time all day long. And I'm like, oh, that sounds kind of pleasant. Like, but because I'm a shame-driven maniac, like, I can't even enjoy that part of being glum. I have to still do stuff, you know, and I'm beating my brains out on this project.
You have to produce in the middle of glumness.
I have to produce in the middle of glumness to, like, show the world how not affected by it I am. I mean, it's a miserable way to live. Really, it is. So, yeah, I think if I was just a four, I could probably enjoy the glumness and probably sit around and feel sorry for myself and, I don't know, watch TV and be in a blanket. But, like, I don't know, I can't even do that very well.
That's the thing, too, man.
That bums me out.
But what you just said, too, is so interesting because I feel like everything that I do is related to production. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's always related to, like, the things that I do. It's always, like... It's like, here's what I did. Here's what I have to show for what I did with my day. So no matter how depressed, how low, how high I am, like, there is, like, some kind of product that has to come out of that because it's the nature of what I do in every area of my life. And so sometimes, man, you just want to be like, I don't want to have anything to show for anything. But then that's a struggle because you're so used to always, like, producing something.
Yeah.
So even when you don't produce something, you're like, well, that feels great, except now I feel empty because I didn't produce anything.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's 1,000% how I live. So it's serious question. I have two questions, and Pipe, you can address either of these. How do you square that maniacal, probably shame-driven desire to produce with, you know, faith and trusting the Lord for provision and even just, like, emotional provision? So that's one question. And I think another thing that I'm grappling with is, like, we are average, you know, we're average writers. You guys are probably average in ministry. I think I'm probably an average professor. Like, we're average. Like, we don't have a million listeners. We're not making $1 million on this. Like, we're average. And I think it's hard to be average, but I don't know why I would expect anything else. Like, I have average parents, you know, and Pipe, of all three of us, you probably have the highest upside. Just, like, given that both of your parents are brilliant, like, you've got a high ceiling. Like, we don't even have that. I don't know. Address either of those things.
Well, let me address the average thing. I take a lot of comfort in average.
Talk about that.
For two reasons. One, I did grow up in a house of brilliant people and learned fairly early that trying to keep up with them was exhausting and not for me. You know, if I aspired to do what my dad does in terms of productivity and the sheer volume of work he's put out, like, setting aside, you know, what you believe about his theology or his ministry or whatever, just writing that many books, trying to sell as many books, etc. If I tried to match that, I would be curled up in a blanket in the dark somewhere. I mean, that's not really, I would be doing that with an array of empty bottles around me, not watching The Office. That would have driven me to that. But so average for me is like, this is okay. This is where I am. This is like, somebody would tell me I'm not aspiring to enough, but at the same time, I can laugh with my kids. I can hang out with friends. I can sleep at night. Like there are a lot of things in life that I'm like, life is all right. So average works for me. The other thing is, I think steady averageness really adds up over time. So I turn 40 next year, which that doesn't seem like any sort of crisis to me. Maybe it will as I get closer. But what dawned on me was that by the time I turn 40, I will have published, I think, 6 books. And that is entirely a product of steady averageness. It's not aspiring to greatness. It's just sort of what's the next thing in front of me that I can kind of get my hands into and keep plugging away. And that doesn't mean that I'm kind of constantly like floating like, oh, this is great. Cause I do feel a lot of that like pressure to produce. I'm really bad at slowing down. Vacation doesn't come easy for me. Resting doesn't come easy for me. I rest when I've collapsed basically, or when my wife is like, stop, you're going to hurt yourself. But yeah, there's just, I don't know, the average thing, I look at it and I go, okay, we've done an average podcast for 8 years. You know how many other podcasts out there have lasted 8 years? Probably less than 1%.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, we're in the top 5% of all podcasts by listeners, like listener downloads per month. We're not exceptional, but there is something that really works about just consistently being average.
Yeah, I hope there's something that works about being glum on the air. Girls, this is going to be an unpopular episode.
But then it'll be gone and we'll do another one next week because we're consistently average.
Exactly. You know, that's a good word. And actually, I really do admire that about you, Pipe, that you're able to like, just deal with what's in front of your face and not sort of try to see yourself in a certain way. And reform guys are really good at sort of romanticizing plotting, and I wish I could also be good at that. I've really wanted to. Like I've read the plotting articles, and I've known people who are good at romanticizing that, and I really would like to be one of those people. But
The other thing about that though, there's a side to romanticizing plotting that is a quick way to like keep other people from excelling, you know.
Yeah.
In a world full of gray, the person who wears red stands out a little too much. You're like, no, we all just do gray. Don't try to be anything special. And they're, for some people are exceptional. And just let them go. Like, great, you go be exceptional. Be better than me. I'll be really happy for you when you sell 150,000 copies. I'll be a little bit jealous. But, you know, also good for you. And so there is something in the reform world where there's just sort of a, if somebody is exceptional, there's suspicion of them. There's, you know, there's kind of a grumbling disregard for them. We want to kind of undermine them quietly. So that plotting thing has that effect, I think. That sort of addiction to plotting.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Do you guys know a lot of exceptional people? I don't. I've worked with them, adjacent to them on projects over the years. It's almost always a bad experience. So I always come away from exceptional people kind of being underwhelmed by them, but maybe it's just the type of exceptional person I get exposed to. But I guess I just don't know a lot of exceptional people at this stage of the game. Do you guys? That's like an honest question.
I mean, you know, it's a totally honest question. I think there's some nuance to it too, because like what do we mean when we say brilliant people, right? Because it's like, I do not, when I'm around people that are say like intellectually brilliant, and that typically comes with kind of a particular personality bent most of the time, not all the time, but it comes with a particular kind of bent of personality that I'm not super pumped up about when I'm around it.
Yeah.
And you guys know what I'm talking about.
I feel like maybe you're understating that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm understating it a lot because I'm trying to be kind. And
you're going to hate academia then, baby. Like, I know you're aspiring to this, like, I don't know, seminary prof thing, but academia is filled with people who think they're exceptional but aren't. Like,
well, here's the thing. I would love to. Yeah. I've talked to Jared C about that. So I'm kind of. Mm-hmm. So hold on. I'm going to get to that because I'm glad that you brought that up. So there's another kind of brilliant too, right? I mean, there's all kinds of different kinds of brilliant, right? Where you get people that are like incredibly engaging and funny and just and like you can't wait to be around them. And like, I don't know how brilliant, like from an intellectual standpoint, they are at all. I just know that like as human beings, they're amazing people. And there is a, I don't know, I guess you could say there's a brilliance about that because they know how to, they know how to carry themselves in social situations that to me is like, wow, that's something right there. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, now to me, well, first let me say this. I mean, let me say first a message to our fans. Just remember, all this talk about averageness is, you know, I'm gonna let those two boys speak for themselves with that. First off,
what do you mean? You were notably silent on that portion of the conversation.
Yeah, wait a minute. What do you mean by that?
I'm joking. I'm incredible. Oh. I am like horrifically average, and I was just joking. But but the other thing that you're talking about, baby, in terms of academia. So this is kind of how I see it, right?
Yeah.
I would love to maybe step into academia and be like sort of like reverse the trend a little bit. Like I would like to be the guy that like kind of steps in, you know, with that doesn't have like 17 commentaries, like, you know, trying to juggle that as I walk into the office. Like I would like to be a little bit more of the fun loving party guy that can still go deep, but then still backs away from it and can still have like a normal conversation that doesn't always get, you know, kind of back itself into New Testament Greek or something. Like to me, that would be really, really fun, really inspiring. And it's like, hey guys, so there's this other guy over in the corner there of the room and he might be somebody you like to hang out with.
Yeah.
He's a prof, you know?
I mean, my experience with that, cause I am kind of that guy.
I was going to say like, that's the kind of guy that I think you are in that context, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, let's take a break. Let's take a little ad break, and on the other end of it, we'll come back and talk about what it looks like to be that kind of guy in academia. We'll be back. All right, we're back. Big R, you laid out kind of an archetypal way forward for you in the academy. I kind of am being that kind of guy now. I'm about to embark.
You kind of embody that.
Yeah, I embody it a little bit. And I'll say this, and this is a real word. I'm not trying to be funny here. Like, certain people will love you for it. So you're going to enjoy that, right? You'll enjoy sort of being different. You'll enjoy being the unique guy in academia, and certain people will love you for it.
And here it comes. And then there's the other 98%. I know what you're going to say.
Well, and it's not even 98%, right? It's not. But other people will hate you for it. And they will hate you for the reason that Pipe outlined before, and they'll hate you because you are different. And they'll hate you because you're attempting to do the thing that they do, but in a different way. They'll be threatened by the sort of the level of enjoyment that people experience when they're with you. It's that broken, human, fallen, you know, sin nature thing that like doesn't allow us to enjoy the sort of uniqueness of other people as much as we should. So that's coming. But yeah, academia by and large is an environment full of people who think they're special, but they really aren't. And it's an interesting place to live in light of that. You know what I mean? Because you're forever kind of wanting to remind people how average they actually are, but you're also wanting to, I want to drink the Kool-Aid too. You know what I mean? Like I would enjoy thinking that I'm special. That looks fun. And sometimes I do, sometimes I'm able to pull it off. But not all the time. And I think if you're pulling it off all the time, you're a delusional kind of self-obsessed narcissist anyway, that none of us want to be if we're walking closely with the Lord. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, agreed. I know. And I think I just, you know, it's something kind of like if you're somebody that can step back and you can, I'm always fascinated by there's always like a couple people in the room that are focusing out when they're in the middle of a crowded room and they're observing the types. And if you're like, if you can be one of those kind of people, only by being one of those kind of people, can you break the type? If you're in a room where it's kind of objectively kind of all the same, you know? Yeah. And so I love the challenge because I do, because I am kind of one of those guys, again, not to be all special, but like I'm kind of fascinated by the observation process of that. And so I like the challenge of that. I think that would be part of my fun entrance into academia if I ever get into academia. But I also think it would be massively frustrating too and challenging. I think it would take a lot of growth on my part. And as, maybe as I'm getting older, that's possible with sanctification. But I mean, to step back and go, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. This is killing me. You know, but at the same time knowing, but here's the challenge. You don't have to be that guy. You can be over here and be that guy. But I know it comes with pluses and minuses. I get it.
It does. And I'm going to ask you one more question about academia. Then I want to hear Pipe on some of this stuff because he's been academia adjacent for most of his life and in it at times. I guess my question is, it's a two-parter probably. Like, do you really want to be in academia or is it just a bit? And I'm not trying to be condescending. Like, cause I don't know. We all do a thing sometimes where we do bits and then we all have things that we're actually serious about. And so are you serious about it or is it a bit? And then the follow-up question would be, I think the high ceiling for guys like us in academia is we can be popular sometimes, right? And being popular is fun. I know you like it. I like it. It's fun. But they're never gonna trot you out. You're never going to be the trot-out guy because you're not quite them enough for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
So are you comfortable not being the trot out guy? Can you live with that?
I don't know. I mean, that's a great question. Yeah. Since I haven't experienced it, like, I don't know. I've experienced it in other areas, you know, so I know what you're talking about.
I don't know
if I would like academia. I'll tell you, this is what I do like that's different from pastoral ministry that I think I would like. What I like is that you can create content that you just get to sort of like go over and over and over and finely tune and hone in on. I like that rather than always creating something brand new because there's a sense of creating something within a structure that's already been created that I like better.
Yeah.
And I like, so I mean, I already do like teaching stuff, you know, where I'm in with a small group of guys and I like the dialogue of teaching that you don't get with preaching because I like that interaction. And I know you know what I'm talking about, T. Like, that's a fun interaction because that's where you can have some personality. You can lighten things up when people get too heavy. You can insert, you control the narrative in a way that, I mean, again, when you're preaching, you control the narrative, but there's no back and forth. There's no interaction. It's a monologue. And I just think being able to connect with people on a more regular basis on that level, since I do it on a more irregular level, I really enjoy it. It's super fun for me. And I just, I always think like that could just be really enjoyable for me. And I think, I think I have some natural born skills in it. So, I don't know, but I could be totally wrong. I could be completely wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and you'll never know until you hypothetically get there. Pipe, talk about whether any of this is resonating with you / like we could take it in a funny direction or we could keep it serious. The funny direction would be an NFL or NBA comp for Ronnie in academia. Like what kind of academic is he going to be theoretically, but take it in whatever direction you want to take it. Is any of that resonating?
Well, yeah, let me give the scouting report on Ronnie as an academic. And it's a little bit like from the NFL draft this year. You got Kayvon Thibodeau, who's a pass rusher, who was
Dude, that's a perfect comp.
Was, you know, he long been respected, highly rated. Everybody was aware of him. And there was just a persistent criticism of him that he was interested in too many things. He wasn't enough of a ball guy. Like he just, football wasn't his
namely
whole
himself.
Life. Yeah. So he, you know, he likes to read and he's intelligent and he's entertaining and he's, you know, he can carry a conversation, which in the NFL world is not acceptable because you need to be frothing at the mouth and chewing glass and eating nails and walking on coals and running through brick walls or you're not a ball guy. I think that's just Ronnie in academia. He's like, oh, no, I like people and I enjoy food and I occasionally laugh. And they're like, this is unacceptable. You're not a true academic. And yet similar to what I suspect will happen for Kayvon Thibodeau, I think there's a bright future ahead. And and the critics can be proven wrong, and there's a place for people with varied interests. So that's my scouting report on
Wow, that's nice, Pipe. That's very kind, my friend.
That's actually a perfect comp. That works really well. Pipe, I think your dad, I mean, even though your dad was, I don't know, maybe he was a college professor for a while, was he?
Yeah, he was for 5 or 6 years before becoming a pastor.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he strikes me as the kind of person who would think of himself as an academic. You strike me as the kind of person who wouldn't, and I don't, despite being a college professor for 8 years. I don't use the term academic. I don't think of myself as an academic. And that like bothers some people that I work with. Like they always want to have this argument like twice a year where they're like, no, you're an academic. And I'm like, no, actually I'm not. I'm a teacher, you know, I'm a school teacher, but, I don't know. It's how do you feel about the term academic?
Well, it's a little bit like hearing the term chemist. Like, yeah, those, yeah. Okay. There are people who know a lot about a thing in a field.
Yeah.
And they focus on that thing, and okay, good for them. And I'm over here doing a very different thing. That's kind of how I feel. I mean, obviously academic is, and especially in theology and in the Christian world, covers a lot of ground, and I'm probably closer to that than I am chemist. Well, I'm certainly closer to that than I am chemist, but you asked the question earlier, you know, how many exceptional people do we know? Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting question because I grew up around somebody who many people would call exceptional, and had many exceptional people at our dinner table and worked in publishing. Mm-hmm. So cross paths with a lot of exceptional people. And what I've come to realize is like, there aren't really exceptional people. There's, remember when, like in the 90s, when you play Madden football and you create a player and you got a certain allotment of like character traits. And if you made them really good in one thing, you couldn't make them good in something else. That's every exceptional person. Like, even if you read the Steve Jobs biography, absolutely brilliant, except he was like antisocial, psychopathic, crazy, mean, etc. Same with Michael Jordan. So people who are exceptional are almost always exceptional at something, are almost always bad at something else. The question is, are they humble enough to recognize it? So the best exceptional people, like I'd put my dad in this category, I'd put somebody like Ray Ortland in this category, are people who excel at certain things and have no problem going, I'm not very strong in these other areas. I need better people around me. I need to hand off those responsibilities. I need to apologize when I get stuff wrong, you know, just sort of general humility. But I'm never impressed by exceptional people because when you run across, I mean, I'm impressed at things that they do.
Yeah.
But I mean, you talked about this in the academic world. I've known plenty of brilliant academics, and by and large, they can't look you in the eye, or they can't carry on a conversation, or they can't connect with a normal person. They can't have a conversation about, like, you know, we spent 40 minutes talking about Top Gun last week, and they can't do that. You know, and if they do, they're getting into like the themes of the literary imagery, and you're like, whatever, I have a need for speed. That's where I was going with this. And there's, I don't know, the exceptional person thing, I just kind of shrug at it and go, if you want to be a well-rounded person, you won't be exceptional. That's kind of, you know, that's back to the average. Like, we're average, I think, because all of us want to be decent at lots of things instead of excelling at one thing at the expense of other things.
Yeah, I mean, we care about our marriages and our kids and our churches and our friendships. And, dude, I'll tell you guys something that blew me away from an existential standpoint. So my kid's doing this camp thing this summer. He's a counselor. And they had a camp for, like, pretty severely, like, disabled people. And he's kind of given me updates from it and sending me pictures. And they're wrecking me, right? Like, they're just destroying me in good ways. And I'm proud of him, and I'm proud of how the Lord is using him. And I look at these pictures and I just think, this is it. Like, this is the meaning of life. and it's small and it's contained in a week, you know, but it's a week that he would call hard work, but that those kids would call maybe the best week of their lives. I don't know. I look at stuff like that and I wonder if we're doing it all wrong. You know what I mean? And I don't know that there's an answer to be gleaned from it. I'm not a great, like, gleaning the answer guy. I'm great at being moved by things. You know what I mean? Mm. I can see a picture and I can cry and I can go, that wrecks me, and I'm proud of my kid and I see the Lord in it and my heart's gladdened, but I'm not good at, like, extrapolating the takeaway.
That's because you're not an academic.
yeah, very true. And we've come full circle.
What I mean, the example you just gave, that, you know, him working at a camp with severely disabled people, it's certainly, the significance of that certainly flies in the face of, you know, we're talking about exceptional people. What we're really talking about, people, we're talking about high functioning, high producing people.
Right.
Which is, I mean, I guess that's a form of being exceptional, but by that definition, everybody at that camp, including the volunteers, are not exceptional.
Yeah.
Because there's no measurable success. Some of those people will never be able to produce something, you know, a product.
Sure. But, right.
So clearly there's an extreme breakdown in how we value what is exceptional and what's not. And the difficulty is, I don't think we can actually measure the things that are truly exceptional. You know?
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend about, you know, going on vacation with kids, and he was like, oh, you know, when you have little kids, he's like, vacation is no longer restful. It's about making memories for them. You know, you basically are invested in making memories. And I thought, that's, you know, that's a good thought. It's a good word.
Yeah.
But we don't even know the memories we're making. Like, the stuff that I remember about my dad and my mom are not the things that they were trying to do to make memories. It was just them doing normal stuff. All that to say, yeah, I think we work so hard to measure and grade and to kind of evaluate on what is exceptional, what really matters. And I'm pretty sure we just miss it 80-95% of the time.
I think we do. Yeah, I think we do. Boys, let's take a break. One last one. We'll come back and we'll talk briefly about ad stuff. All right, we're back. Let's do a couple minutes of, you know, we've been in this partnership with Life Audio for a while. The ads have been all over the place. Some helpful, some annoying, some off color. What are you guys hearing out in the wild about the way that our ads are working?
I've heard from two different listeners who live in the Middle East, which, by the way, we have listeners in the Middle East. That's pretty fantastic.
That's a solid flex.
And yeah, I would,
that's exceptional.
Yeah. That's above average, I guess. Apparently the geolocating aspect of these ads is working great, because they said they consistently get reminders to go to prayer in Arabic. So,
oh my gosh,
and in the midst of our Christian podcast, they are getting reminded to go to the mosque for prayer, to participate in prayer where they are five times
a
day. Wow. So, Hijab Life Audio, I mean, the algorithm is working, sort of.
I didn't know that it was possible for me to feel more depressed this morning, but that may have done it. That may have driven the emotion needle even yet lower.
If it makes you feel better, in a lot of those Middle Eastern cities, anywhere there's a mosque, they have, like, the minaret, and, like, there's a loud call to prayer five times a day. That's anyway, true. So I'm not sure that our podcast is really moving the needle on that one.
Yeah, it's not like anybody's like, hey, you know what? I was listening to this manifestly Christian podcast, and for 30 seconds I was urged to go to the mosque. So, you know what? Doggone it. You twisted my arm. You know, enough. Stop already. I'm going.
Mom, let's go.
Yeah, I'm going to the mosque. Good grief, dude. Baby, what are you getting?
Well, so I've gotten a few messages from friends, mainly, that it's along these lines. It's like, dude, have you listened to one of your pods since you guys went with, you know, the network? And I go, I have not, actually. I haven't. I don't listen to the pod. I record the pod. I don't listen to the pod. And they're like, oh, dude, like, the ads, man. Are you okay with some of those ads? I said, again, I don't know what the ads are. I've never listened. Dude, yeah. Maybe you should listen. Maybe you should listen to what some of those ads are. I said, again, I'm not going to do that. So why don't you tell me what the ads are? And it's like this long dialogue where they're afraid to tell me what some of the ads are. And
dude, that's classic. That's classic, like pastor talk, though, because I'm sure these friends are pastors.
Yeah, some of them are.
They want to do a little gossip. You know, they want to be the titillating, like, well, Ronnie, you know, now have you thought about, they want that. They want that so bad.
Well, I don't typically have those kind of pastor friends, but yeah, I get to your point. Yes. Big T.
Yeah. I mean, you do, but you don't, but you do. You
well,
know.
Yeah, it's like they're, this is what it is. I think it's
the young guys too. The young guys want to gossip.
You landed on something. It's dudes that like are not going to get offended, but they're wondering if I'm offended. And they're like, they're curious. And then if I get a little offended, then that gives them license to go, yeah, man, I don't know. Should you even be doing that? You know, it's like that kind of a thing, right?
Yeah, they kind of want to crap all over your thing, but not really.
They're more curious about what I think. And I'm like, I don't know. I literally don't know.
And they're kind of doing the cool guy thing. They're like, well, I'm not offended. I mean, I'm fine with it, but
it's the same thing they do with, like, you know, whatever prestige TV show where they're like, hey, have you watched this? They ask first, because then that's the first barrier of like, do they have permission to like this thing? And then if you're like, yeah, I mean, I've seen it. They're like, I mean, I know it's a little gritty. There's, you know, there's a little bit of inappropriate content, and they sort of hem and haw their way into it. It's just that about ads. It's the same thing where instead of just going, man, I love this show, or making a joke about it, they have to kind of put up the moral mile markers along the way.
Well, and I can honestly say this with a clean conscience. Like, if 30 seconds of some stupid ad on a stupid podcast is going to cause you to stumble, like, you probably need to go live under a rock. Like, that just isn't going to happen. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe the podcasting world is not for you.
Yes, maybe the world in general is not for you. And as someone who questions annually whether the world is something for me, I get it. You know, like, I understand that, like, mind space very well. But
see, Ronnie has very different kinds of friends than I do, because like you get all of that sort of like, let's work around this issue until we get there. I just got two texts last week from two different friends who just said, dude, why am I getting tampon ads on your podcast?
That's the kind of friends I have. I have like fun dirtbag friends.
No, I've gotten some of that. Guys, I've gotten some of those too. Yeah. Like, dude, I just heard an ad for, you know, fill in the blank, and it was like, oh, wow, that's something. Yeah.
I just remind them that they're targeted ads, and so I just kind of, I don't know, you tell me. What is this?
Exactly. Boys, I know somebody has to leave at 10 o'clock, so I should wrap the episode. But a weird thing happened. I feel better. So I'm a little.
I kind of was sensing that your mood shifted.
Yeah, I feel a little bit better. So thanks for
time to head to the mosque.
Time to head to the mosque. Give thanks. Good grief, boys! We've done what we always do, which is wander to and fro throughout my apparently complex emotions and some mosque stuff. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Hi, friend. Are you stressed, maybe even worried about so many needs around you that you've forgotten you are worth taking care of too? Well, I'm Bonnie Gray, the host of Breathe, the Stressless Podcast. I want to invite you to join me as I share practical tips based on science, inspired by God's Word, to help you spark joy and restore God's peace and love to your soul. Subscribe now and go to lifeaudio.com.